Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On E3 2006. It's the geeks' take on the Electronics Entertainment Expo. For more information about our links and other news, go to our website at www.geekson.com.
Hey, welcome back, my geeklings. Welcome back.
This is the Matt Light episode.
We are Geeks Light with 25%... No, actually, we have artificial geek sweetener this week.
Yes, we do.
Artificial, correct.
That's right. We have a geek guest, so let's do introductions real quickly. My name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
My name is Peter Robinson. I am a screenwriter and filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
I am Donald Marshall. I'm a video game professional and a writer here in Hollywood, California, and I am a geek.
And I am Dylan Pedersen. I am a projects manager out of Boise, Idaho, and I am a geek.
Woohoo! Welcome, Dylan. Yay. Dylan is the new Matt. Matt is out of town, but we felt like since this is our E3 episode, that if we didn't get out an E3 episode right after E3, then...
Dropping the ball.
Yeah, it would be a little weird.
Yeah, so, Matt's heading towards a beach in Mexico.
Yeah, Cabo San Lucas, you bastard.
What type of geek is that?
Bring me back some sun.
Pass up the E3 episode over a beach in Mexico. I mean, come on.
Really? This is also our first E3 episode without Lisa. Lisa was on a cruise ship this year and did not get to go to E3.
She screwed up.
And...
She was actually very upset.
She's having a few conniptions on the cruise ship right now.
Really?
Right.
So she'll actually be listening to this to get E3 information because we all went to E3.
It's true.
Yes, that was
I even picked up some loot for them.
You picked up loot?
Lisa and her sister.
Oh, very Absolutely. Good. Well, that was our geek week, really,
this week.
So, but before we get into E3, why don't we do some geek news?
Geek news.
Who wants to go first?
Stare at Peter.
I'll go first.
We have a lot to talk about. That's why we're kind of cutting through the fat this time.
We've all heard of Gone in 60 Seconds. My news story is about Gone in 20 Minutes.
Ooh,
actually, what this is about
movie.
Is... it's about... We've all heard about these new keyless entry and ignition systems.
Right.
You know, you don't need a key anymore. You have, you know, your remote starts your car. Well, apparently car thieves love this because they can now steal your car with a laptop in about 20 minutes. So
instead of 60 seconds?
Instead of 60 seconds,
20 minutes? Seconds, you mean?
It takes about 20 minutes, but I mean, you know, they find your car, you know, at night somewhere. They pull up next to it. They sit in their car with their laptop. Second later.
Remotely, you mean?
Remotely, they sit next to it. And the laptop will unlock the car and start the engine, and they will drive. And the thing about this is that most of these cars that have these systems are very, very expensive cars.
Mm-hmm.
So they're you know.
Prime,
right. So, you know.
Actually, that could be great canon for a sequel of the movie. Gone in 60 Seconds, the hacker edition, you know. They instead of, you know, busting through the windows, they have hot chicks that are hackers with midriffs showing that can put on VR goggles and somehow go into the car, unlock it while, you know, there's a chase going on.
Because all the hackers I know are busty blonde hotties. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, exactly.
You should see where I work, man. Just all of them. Busty, blonde, gorgeous women wandering around with their midriffs bare.
If you could only see my face right now.
Oh, but I can.
So
right. Now the cops aren't only going to be looking for people who are doing road warring and running around getting into people's internet connections. They're going to be looking out for people hanging out trying to break into cars.
Exactly. So now you need like a firewall for your car.
You know what I predict? A virus defense system for cars in the near future. If something's trying to access your car and it doesn't have authorization, it's going to launch a virus back at the laptop.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe alert you via an email, SMS.
Yeah, that's secondary.
What are you going to do about it anyway?
Well, you
right?
think it will be an act of attack against the person?
Well, no. I mean, I think Daryl's completely right. It's going to be a total alert system first. But I would. I mean, if that's what I would want. I would want my car to defend itself.
Yeah, right. I'm just waiting for like little like, you know, mini tasers to pop up and be like,
or gas to pop up.
What? Which was the movie? I think it was one of the RoboCop movies. They have commercials for inventions.
Yeah.
And like one of the commercials is like a flamethrower mounted on your car that will incinerate someone trying to pick the lock.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember
what that.
What
was that?
I think it was RoboCop.
I love that.
RoboCop 2 or
I
something.
Want one.
All right, Dylan, do you have a news story for the week?
I sort of have a news story. It's more something that I want to share with people. My wife and I used a device called the IntelliFit system. What it is, it's a geeky sort of wardrobe thing. So it's a booth that you go into and stand in. The one we used was creating dead space. That's exactly what I want to do. In San Francisco in the Levi's store, what it is, it's a booth that you stand and walk in, and a scanning arm goes all the way around you using radio waves. Yeah.
No way.
Yes way.
That's cool.
It looks sort of like a single-person teleporter booth.
Mm-hmm.
And this arm sweeps around you and picks up all your measurements. And then they give you a printout of your measurements and all the jeans in the store that'll fit you.
What?
It's called the IntelliFit system.
Well, it's like that in Sleeper. Remember when Woody Allen went to the Jewish robot? He goes, "Yeah, stand behind here. Looks like you need a." Don't you guys remember that?
No,
and it analyzed
totally
the size and
the
then,
tailor.
The tailor, and then all of a sudden the suit pops out, and of course it didn't fit at all. It's like, we can take it in.
No, it's really close to that, though. A lot of different designers are actually giving their measurements over to the IntelliFit system, so then you can go online and check out the database, and it'll tell you what fits you.
Right. Apparently, they give you like a – I've heard that they give you some type of code or card so that when you go to online sites, you scan in your code or you type in this thing, and it's in the system. So no matter what you order – it always will fit you when it comes to from the website.
Exactly. And
I wonder if it can be programmed to lie. You know? Just reduce all my measurements by two. I'll be
fine. Yeah, or it scans you and it says, do you want to add or subtract a size?
Yeah.
And you can like...
No, what it does is it makes it to your actual measurements, but then just lies on the tag.
That's what I'm saying.
So
exactly.
It fits, and everybody's a two now.
Yeah, and so you say you're interested in these pair of jeans. It sends a runner out that fixes the tag on the jeans for you.
Exactly.
Brings it on back. That would be great.
Good idea.
I'd love that.
All right, Don. How
I
about
have that 32-inch waist I've always dreamed of.
How about you, Don? Any news
stories? Okay, well, I have a silly news story this week. I have two. The first news story I have is there's really nothing terribly interesting about the news story itself. It's
all
about
right, can
a
we move
woman
on
in Georgia who on the school board has defeated a parent's proposition that Harry Potter be added to the no read list for the school.
Oh,
okay. Wait, defeated it.
They defeated it.
They defeated
okay.
it. Right. They said that's silly. Our students know the difference between, you know, fantasy and reality. Right.
And satanic
and this book
literature.
Makes them interested in reading. Therefore, it is a good book.
Right. Right.
But the reason why this proposal was being taken seriously was because the parents group that was suggesting it said it supported Wiccanism,
mm-hmm.
right? And Wiccanism is a religion, and they're advocating a religion in the school.
Is that even in any of the books? Wicca?
Well, it's not. That's one of the reasons why it went down.
Oh.
But like, that was the proposal by the parents.
Oh, okay.
Right?
So is this trying to hit witchcraft at a different angle?
It's trying to hit Harry. Yeah, it's trying to hit it at a different angle.
Yeah,
but
well, this is the new way that they're using to attack things they don't like anymore. Is they're not attacking it directly based on their beliefs. They're trying to find these sort of, you know, pseudo legalistic reasons to back up what they're doing.
Exactly.
But how can even if it okay? Let's say it has Wicca all over it.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they have the right to decide that Wicca, just because it's not a Christian religion, shouldn't be taught in school or shouldn't
well,
have it?
That's what they're saying. They're saying it is advocating a religion, separation of church and state. You've got to get rid of this.
Yeah, but that's different between teaching something and having it
in the library.
In the library.
Well, but they're saying that what they're putting forward is this is advocating a religion, and you are putting it in a federally funded school.
So hang on. Does that mean that I shouldn't be able to read, like, say, ancient Greek myths because those also advocate religions?
Uh-huh. That's what I was about to put out. If they had been successful, I don't think they'd necessarily entirely thought this through.
I don't think they care.
The neck things that go away, C.S. Lewis, the Narnia books, gone.
Right.
Left Behind series, which apparently some kids like. gone.
I don't think Left Behind series is in a school. I'm sure that is not in a school.
I'd be curious to find out if it is.
Because I hear that's pretty inflammatory stuff in there.
Yeah, but it's very pro-Christian. I wouldn't be surprised if it's showing up in... I'm talking out of my butt. I don't know if it is or not. But I wouldn't be surprised.
By the way, you need to move the microphone closer to your butt.
He's wondering why it smelled funny.
I'm glad that... I mean, you know, it's a bunch of morons out there making these, you know, trying to pass these laws and stuff.
Well, it's really interesting to me that some of the way they're advancing these things, I don't know if they fully think through the consequences. That, you know,
well, they don't care because they know that it is never going to get knocking Narnia out. So they're going to use this, you know, as a one-sided tool to get some judge, hopefully, that's on their side to say, oh, yeah, we can't advocate. And then, you know, we'll be talking about, well, what about Narnia? And everyone will go, dumbasses, you know, that's never going to get passed. And then, you know, yeah. Harry Potter will be gone and Narnia will be in there.
Well, the other thing that happens, too, is because the schools are controlled at the local basis, they start going through the school boards, which are generally local community members and promoting some of these items as well. So Right. Then it just becomes harder for us to fight it within the legal system, and we end up spending money on items we really shouldn't have to spend money on defeating because it's going against common sense to begin with.
Right.
Here's the deal. We're electing these people. We're putting them in on our courts. We're electing these people.
And
we're
boards.
Putting them in our House of Representatives.
Are school boards elected? I have no idea.
Yes. School, yeah.
Okay.
They're in our school boards.
Except
if this is what you want in your school boards, fine. If this is the type of people you want in your justice system, your school boards, I don't care if Kansas sits there and elects all these dumbasses that teach them all this hocus pocus. That's what they want. It's absolute insanity, but guess what? I'm not moving there, and neither are my kids, so...
Well, you know, what if you were already there? What if Hollywood suddenly swung far to the right, and you had three small children?
But yeah, I would fight it, and I would try to get people to fight it. I mean, we elect people that, you know, people complain about Bush right now. Oh, it's the lowest, you know, he's got the lowest rating of all time. Hey, guess what? We put him there. Welcome to, you know,
the
swell that you voted them in, you know. Surprise!
Xboxvoting.org.
Did anybody hear about the Diebold machines? I didn't hear the details, but they're saying that the Diebold machines have a serious flaw that could allow people to artificially swing an election.
Oh, yeah, that's been on the record since 2002.
No, I know, but now it's becoming, you know, now it was on NPR.
Well,
you know?
There was the statement that they were found certain votes that had been placed on certain electronic voting machines in Florida were date stamped within the logs before the voting dates.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So, by the way, if you're going to fix an election, do it right.
More,
idiots.
Yeah. They keep finding more and more wrong with them, and after every election, they always seem to find a few more votes.
That happened. It's been happening for 1,000 years. So, you know. Okay. I have a little tidbit of news for the board gaming, war gaming community. Panzer Grenadier, which is a war game, World War II war game, that's not up to the advanced squad leader type of rules. So it's, you know, kind of medium level rules for World War II gamers. Panzer Grenadier has the third edition out. The rule set, and you can download it for free as a PDF, so you don't have to go buy a whole new set. Even though you've got all your pieces, all your map orbs, all your scenarios, you can go download the third edition, read them, and continue playing. You don't have to buy more stuff, but there's plenty of other additions and scenarios coming out, including an airborne release that just came out, 1999 for that. So anyway, I own the game. Hopefully I'll get to play it here with somebody. I'm not sure who, but anyway, go check it out. We'll have a link to it on our website.
So do you guys remember a couple of episodes back, we talked about some mice where they were able to change their genetics so that they regrew fingers. I mean, you could cut their spinal cord. It would grow back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Remember that little mouse with the ear on its back?
That was so disturbing.
I don't remember that.
From the 90s or whatever.
Yeah, that I don't remember. But they also were able to take a little bit of this mouse's blood, mm-hmm. put it into other mice, and other mice developed the same tendencies.
It's mm-hmm. just so wrong.
Okay. Well, there's a new story that reminds me of that story. I think it's really interesting. They have discovered a cancer-resistant mouse. Okay. Mm-hmm. They didn't invent it. They just discovered it.
Okay.
And it was a while back, 1999, where they discovered it. Well, recently they realized that if they transplant white blood cells from this mouse into other mice, that it kills off the cancers that they have, and the mice develop a lifetime immunity to cancer.
Well, great. We're about ready to save all the mice in the world.
Well,
wow. I mean, that's huge.
It's huge, yeah. Because if you could find a way of doing the same thing in humans, I mean, you've got a way of basically inoculating people against cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is fascinating. It's just
this is not a breed of mouse. This is a specific, like, Joe the mouse.
Well, you know? I mean, now they are now breeding it. They've genetically bred this resistant trait into more than 2,000 descendants or 14 generations. And about 40% of each generation inherits the protection, you know, to cancer. So it is becoming a breed.
So about 14%.
40%.
40%, wow.
Yeah, 40% of each generation inherits the protection for cancer.
Unfortunately, it's allowing these mice to develop habits like smoking again without any recourse.
Yeah, yeah, well.
Eating barbecue unlimitedly.
They said that, you know, for example, if they took a highly, you know, really bad tumor that has never been cured and put it in the mouse's back and then injected the blood or just the white blood cells into its stomach, it would absolutely find its way to the tumor, kill the tumor without harming any of the other cells.
Damn.
Wow.
So
aggressive.
It's great. Yeah. And the fact that the single injection of this would, you know, be long-term protection for the entire lifespan is just amazing to me.
Now, usually at the end of these articles,
yeah.
It says something like the practical use of this on humans is 15 to 20 years away. Did you see any indication?
No.
They didn't mention that phrase.
It just says
the fact that we don't know the origins of it, I imagine, could be
that it says
the slowing factor.
Yeah, the next steps include understanding the molecular mechanism. The real key is finding the mutation, which is an ongoing investigation in collaboration with several other laboratories.
I mean, it really confuses me how that would work. Because you don't just learn spontaneously to make a new type of white blood cell. You'd need a bone marrow transplant plant, wouldn't you?
It's a genetic. It could be involved virus, but it's a genetic. Those whatever isn't being injected in there, the red blood cells or the white blood cells are reproducing.
So
and white taking
blood
over.
Cells, well, so unless I'm very wrong, white blood cells don't reproduce. They're generated by marrow, aren't they?
It could be a virus or something.
I could be completely wrong.
I think you're right, where it's generated within the marrow as part of the other blood.
Something's reproducing.
Well, it's saying it's white blood cells in the article. They didn't invent this mouse in any way. They just found it.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's two parts to it.
Yeah.
One is like if you take a single bacteria and put it in a petri dish and let it grow all the way over, and then you throw arsenic or other things that are generally kill everything in it, mm-hmm. a small population will always live.
Right.
Or not always, but lots of times. And that's due to genetic mutation through the generations being built. So that part of it sounds reasonable, mm-hmm. that there are mice and there are people out there that are cancer resistant.
Especially in a lab where they're killing mice with cancer constantly.
Yeah. But it's taking that ability or that genetic structure and moving it into another person. That's sounding weird.
It sounds viral. I mean,
yeah.
That's really, really
contagious.
Strange.
I mean,
contagious immunity. That's a great title.
There's no reason why. That's what gene therapy is. A lot of times, it's viruses containing good changes. I mean, we all think, oh, you got a virus, something bad's going to happen. But a virus can carry mutations that are good for you.
Right. But what I'm saying is, white blood cells are not viruses.
No, but there could be virus in that blood. With those white blood cells, is what I'm saying. And so they're injecting the blood that's containing some type of virus or some type of genetic, a way of, you know, changing the mouse genetically.
Well, and if it works as a way to just be able to move different types of immunity between people or animals or whatever, that's just a wonderful thing as well. I mean, we have almost two great things happening here. One is possibly the ability to kill cancer, and then the other one is possibly the ability to share immunities.
But really, you know, the thing is that what they really need to find is for mice at least, is the resistance to these crazy manic scientists who are always infecting them with all these diseases. Not a resistance against cancer. That's what they need to find. So, all right, I'm done with news. Anybody else got any news?
No, I only brought two articles. Oh, well, yeah. I'll mention that Transformers is being made by Michael Bay.
Yes.
You know, I thought that was interesting.
And video games to come and match that movie.
And there's a new program available. I'll just throw this out real quick. It's called Cat Protect, if I remember correctly. And it recognizes the keyboard input from a cat as it walks across your keyboard. And it makes your computer emit a annoying sound to a cat, which drives the cat away. And apparently it's actually selling fairly well.
So it analyzes that it's random keys that's being hit, so it must be a cat.
Random keys in a pattern that a cat would walk across the keyboard on.
See, I spell so poorly that it might actually look at my spelling as a cat crossing the keyboard.
Aaron's typing, it's like,
damn it, ah, God.
So you type from the lower right to the upper left.
Yeah, exactly.
If you've ever read one of his articles, yes.
All right, let's move on to our special topic of the year,
E3.
That's right, it's Geeks on E3. We all went to E3 this week. And some of us spent more time there. Some of us didn't spend a whole lot of time there. So this is not a comprehensive.
Yeah.
This is our view of E3.
I'm sure we all missed stuff.
It was definitely harder to get in this time around. You know.
Yeah. Definitely hard to get in there. That which meant there wasn't as many people there.
Yeah.
I went on Friday, and my God, getting around was so easy.
Yeah, it was not crowded at all.
We went the first hour of the first day, and it looked like there was probably only 80% of the people there as the year before.
That sounds about a right number that we saw on Friday.
Fridays seem dead compared to the other 2 days.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Fridays are always kind of the wind down day. But so if you do want a comprehensive view of E3, of all the games, of all your systems that, you know, we couldn't get to all of them, then, you know, go to IGN, go to GameSpot. GameSpot and IGN also have lots of videos, including all the press conferences, which we'll talk about here.
Also, a couple video game channels are always great for E3 coverage.
Yeah, G4 did 3 hours a day.
I find the TV channels only really cover the South Room. They don't really go into, like, the smaller independent companies that are just trying to get their feet in the door.
No, right.
You know, and we saw some fun stuff down there.
Which is a shame because... Oh, go ahead.
G2 might be a good place to check for that. We saw them down there. Which
really?
Is the internet version of G4, I think.
Yeah, it's Tina and... who's the other girl on that call-in show on G4? They got canned.
Yeah.
And they got hired by some company to do an internet show, like a blog, video blog. And they call it G2. So
that's cool.
You know.
All right. It seemed to me the big splash of this year's E3 was obviously the Wii.
Right.
Seeing the new Wii system.
Or the Revolution, if you refuse to call it the Wii.
Now, who here actually saw it?
Nobody here saw it. And why is that?
Because there was a 5-hour wait.
Right.
People who waited online to get into E3 the moment the doors opened ran there.
Yeah.
I know of two different groups of people who did this on Wednesday and Thursday.
Yeah.
They beelined, they went straight to it, and still had to wait online for about 5 hours.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
The line was unbelievable. I mean, it was all behind this big wall, and... you know, there's like 20 games in there that you could get your hands. So everyone, I mean, if you're going to go in there, you better get your hands on it. So, you know, you got to wait for 20 people at a time to, you know, swing that thing around and golf.
It's basically a day's investment for people to have gone in.
You really did. It's true. You had to make a full commitment to that.
Right. And to me, it wasn't worth it. So I didn't stand in line for 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah. I'm more of a software junkie.
We can talk about it a little bit. Do you want to start with Revolution?
Sure.
Let's start with Nintendo.
The big winner from the show, as far as the Revolutions games go, seems to, from word of mouth, I have not seen any of the games offered for it. We tried. Right. We were unsuccessful. Appears to be Red Steel. That's the one I'm hearing the
Red
most
Steel,
about.
I got the impression, was the most developed. Mm-hmm. And the one that contains the vision and the future of what we kind of thought it was going to be when they announced it. It has a sword and it has a gun.
And the premise of Red Steel is you run around and you use the joystick as your sword.
First person shooter.
And it allows you to make whatever motions you want with your sword to fight on the screen.
Yeah. And the cool thing is
horizontal axis, vertical axis, all over the place.
The cool thing is we also learned is, I mean, you have the Wii controller or the Wiimote, and then you have the other, you've never heard of the Wiimote?
I mock you.
I didn't
mock
that.
Your fundamental being right now.
They have the other puck, nunchuck portion, the other controller.
Okay.
Which we also found out is motion sensitive.
Right.
So you could block with the other one. Mm-hmm. If you have a shield, you can hold it up and block. Or in Red Steel, you had a dagger that you could block the guys, attacking you. And it looks cool. Now, mm-hmm. whether it's that reactive, these things, you see these things kind of all the time, and you swing and about a half a second to a second later, it swings on the screen. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work for me. So I'm curious to see whether it is really as reactive to what, does it really feel like when you twist the sword? Are you seeing that on the screen? When you swing it, is it instantaneous? If it isn't, it ain't working.
We'll find out.
We will find out.
I actually want to make a prediction. I predict that when they actually start to advertise this, that their catchphrase is going to be, "Whee!" So I think what we should do is whenever we make a little pun, like a Wiimote, it actually becomes a Wiimote.
No.
Okay. I think everyone else is
doing it. I'm holding a revolution against that concept.
I think, on G4, that's what they do. They always talk about the Wii. I mean, it's like, it's such a poor name that even, in fact, we saw an interview with one of the guys, a representative of Nintendo, and mm-hmm. he even did that.
The Revolution? He called it the Revolution?
No, he called it the Wii.
Oh, God.
And they were like, well, and they brought it up. He goes, see, now even you are making fun of it. He goes, well, you have to have fun.
I'd like to make a guest prediction, if I may, that in about a year, no one's really going to care because we'll all get used to calling it that. I heard we so much the whole way through. My mind just sort of blocked it out and it became a symbol.
Yeah.
It's like the Beatles. Yeah. You don't think of little things scurrying across the ground. You think of, Paul, John, and the rest of them.
Yeah,
that's a good point. True.
It's probably going to become known as the system formerly known as the Revolution.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well,
a nice short name.
Shall we talk about some of the things we saw?
Let's talk about the
generic systems first.
I would still go down, still talk about Revolution. I mean, about Nintendo, I mean.
Fine with me.
The booth, moving on to a new system, mm-hmm. to me was all about the DS Lite.
Well, I don't know if that's true or not. That was the one we could reach. That was the one that was available to the public.
There were zero GameCubes on that floor.
Yeah.
Not one. I looked everywhere. We couldn't find it.
No. Just your system,
Well, there were Xboxes.
There was PS2s.
The Xboxes, though, were pitching new software. It was like cooperative marketing. Whereas with the GameCube, I didn't really see any games that were really being pitched to the GameCube.
That's what we're saying is, okay, is the GameCube dead?
Has it been written off?
Yeah.
Yes.
So now, if the
Revolution is going to be cheap. I mean, that's its huge selling point, is that it's compared to the other new generation systems, it's going to be incredibly cheap.
I guess, but what if you just bought one this Christmas?
Then you're 3 years behind the curve already, and you won't really care because you already have a huge game library to pick from.
Is the Revolution backwards compatible?
I don't know,
but they do have the talks about downloadable content of all of their old games.
Oh, I forgot about that.
So that's the Revolution for so sorry, the Wii has the ability to get content online, all the Nintendo games from the past you should be able to play. At least that's what they're indicating. And you can download them onto some hard drive. But they haven't really talked about
that. I was also very impressed by the around the Revolution, they had those video screens set up where you had people sitting in front of a Wii being picked up by the Wii's camera and talking with people online.
Right. Using VoIP features.
Yeah, I was very impressed by the resolution on that. Like,
was that the Wii camera? I thought that was just...
That was the Wii camera.
Oh, really?
They were using the Wii for those. And those,
I didn't know that.
And they had them up on...
They were on plasma screens. Yeah. But, you know, they had all... It was really kind of funny, actually, because I walked around the loop while we were cutting out of there, and there were, like, three bored women...
Going, hi. Sitting,
like, no, hi, no. I'm in a little white box somewhere. How do you think I feel right now?
Yeah.
They were kind of wising off to people. And it was cool.
But they would explain it. Like, people would ask them questions, and they would...
They'd answer.
Yeah. And it was kind of eerie to be talking to a giant plasma screen of a real-sized person. I mean, it was big enough that it was a real, you know, one-to-one-sized person, but they were flat, and they can see you.
And it wasn't just their face. It was their full body.
I mean,
it's not like most video cameras or webcams where you're just looking at half of a, you know, a head or a bust.
Yeah.
Yeah. It worked pretty well. But
they kind of... Well, you know what I mean. Not...
So I actually got my hands on
Lots
the DS...
Lots of webcam uses.
I got my hand on the DS Lite. I played around with it a little bit. And, you know, it's better looking than the DS, I thought.
Okay.
It's kind of iPod-ish. Smaller, a little daintier. I'm not buying one, but, you know. In fact, the games, to me, I didn't see any games there I was particularly happy with. I mean, yeah, they had Castlevania, but it looked like every other Castlevania to me. There wasn't anything really new to it. There was a Star Fox DS, which kind of looked like a Star Fox game.
Yeah.
Star Trek Tactical Assault, although I didn't see it down there, is coming for the DS, but it's also coming for the PSP, so I will be able to buy it.
The thing is, I mean, well, none of these games got me excited. I will say that none of them looked bad.
No, none of them looked bad.
By any stretch of the imagination.
They looked like the other DS games, but there wasn't a Nintendogs this year. I mean, there wasn't a game where everyone was swarming.
Yeah, that's true.
It was all about the line for the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
So, really, the Nintendo's booth was about that big, long line.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that was me, at least... I have nothing else to say about Nintendo. They didn't really have much to show that we could go see.
Yeah, but I mean, they were the only place that had a line that I saw. I mean, the only place that had
Gears of War had a line.
Actually, Spore, a couple of the Activision things did too. The
I mean, I saw demo. I saw small lines places, but that was the only place that had like a long line. I mean, that line was like, I mean, I saw lines that looked like they might be 20 minutes, 30 minutes, you know.
Well, some of them got smarter this year. Like the Gears of War, you went and got a ticket for a time.
Oh.
So you could go in the morning, get a ticket for like a 4 o'clock, and then only those people would be waiting in line. So you'd only get 20 people in line.
There was a line for Aragon, too. That one was a long one.
That one was actually kind of long.
They were saying about 40-minute wait for that.
Well, we'll get to that in a minute, I guess.
Well, I mean, it was a trick. I mean, there would have been a line for the Xbox 360 if they weren't showing it to anybody except for 20 people. I mean, why didn't they put DSs everywhere? I mean, it was a way to get people to talk about it. Now we're all going to, you know, 100 people got to go see a DS this year, and you know, I mean, a Wii, and so you know, that's the, you know, it's a secret cool VIP thing. Well, it was only a secret cool VIP thing is because they forced us to act that way. Yeah. Put it on the floor like everybody else.
Actually, there was one other major line that we saw. But no one was talking about the stuff they saw in there. It was the LucasArts line.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
But nobody was talking about anything they saw in there. I don't know if they had anything new.
They do that every year. They never have anything out.
Okay.
But
we have a couple other ones to talk about.
Okay. Should we move on to another company?
Sure.
Well, let's talk hardware first. Let's talk PS3.
PS3.
Now, the design on this, I mean, that's all I really saw was the design. It actually looks pretty nice.
Of the three new systems, I think the PS3 is probably the most attractive casing.
It looks like something that you put on, you know, you put with all your other fancy stereo equipment, and it fits right in. It doesn't.
It better look like a fancy stereo equipment, because with the price point, as we all know,
it is
unbelievable.
I can't afford it. I'd love to have it, but I can't even dream of it.
I make good freaking money, and I'm not buying that thing. That's too expensive. And okay, here's the reason. I don't have a... In order to buy that and have that make sense, you have to have a high-definition television.
Yes.
And be bought into Blu-ray.
Right.
And the Blu-ray technology that's in it, because that's really what's driving the price, is high-def.
You can buy Xbox 360.
You're buying a dual unit at that point. You're buying a Blu-ray reader, a movie device to watch high-definition movies, high-def DVD, and a video game device.
Well, so that's what I'm saying.
We are making the transition to high-definition TVs in the United States now. In like another 8 to 10 years, everyone's going to have them.
Okay, well, guess what? There'll be a PS4 by then.
Oh, that's true.
There'll be a PS9 by then. No.
Well, okay, not 9. But, you know.
5 years... I mean, this thing just started. The PS2's been out for 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. So, nitty-gritty about PlayStation. Yes, it looks better. Looks really pretty. Fine. Not worth $600.
But they were not demoing an awful lot for PS3.
Well, you know. I mean, it's just like the Xbox 360 was last year. It's always the first wave that's like a little like... They limp out of the gate. Mm-hmm.
They don't want to demo anything unless it looks fantastic.
Right. Well, I think we saw Heaven's Warrior?
Heavenly Sword.
We saw Heavenly Sword on PS3, and that
was awesome looking.
I was amazed by that.
Yeah, it looks really good.
But so did you guys see the Sony press conference?
I did not.
So they talked about they didn't talk much about their PS3 or Sony's live thing, which to me is an indicator that we're going to have the same bullshit we have for PS2. They keep saying, oh yeah, you'll have friends list. Anyway, let's move on. This is an indicator that Sony does not believe that an online community is very important. Yes, they're going to put it in there. Yes, they're going to have a friends list. But is it going to be consistently good? Is it going to work as well as Xbox Live? I really doubt it with the way they're talking about it.
I question what problems they're running into with it, though. It could be logistics problems setting up their networks.
Yeah, because, I'm sure they're having a hard time. You know. But why not talk about how in the future it's going to be awesome? Why not spend a good chunk saying, hey, we're going to have... I mean, they showed some downloadable songs that you can, and they said, "Oh yeah, you'll be able to download content. Tell us what that is. Yeah. Show us that there's going to be a community eventually. Tell us that the friends list is going to be between each game. That if somebody's playing one game, I can talk to them through another game. Show us that this big online community is going to exist. Okay, fine. You're having trouble setting up. I understand that. You're just getting into it. But don't ignore it and pretend like that it's not a big deal. Because to me, that means that you really aren't going to be behind it. You like your big-ass, big machine with your Blu-ray, and that's all you really care about. And I want an online community because I don't have a high-def television.
But... I mean, I'm not sure if Sony right now has franchises that really lend themselves to multiplayer online stuff.
Right. Well, why would they? There's no multiplayer.
They're going to have to develop new titles for that.
And Sony's core market, I mean, Asia-Pac. I mean,
Xbox did it. I mean, when are you going to do it?
It's not a huge online... I mean, everybody's online there, don't get me wrong, with the different types of devices, but not necessarily the gaming communities there.
Yeah.
Right.
And their focus.
It may not be their huge priority, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and Sony, remember, is...
They're trying to differentiate themselves.
They're a big entertainment company. And so they've got... If you think of the politics of large companies, I know these things because I come from a large company. Weird things happen. Blu-ray gets stuffed into these devices partially because, hey, Sony has a lot of movies they want to move, and they want to move it on a standard they helped develop. Mm-hmm. And so if they put these boxes in, just like everybody was talking about Xbox trying to get their devices in to work with the Media Center PC and be an extension of the PC into the TV land, I see the larger strategy from Sony is pushing not through the online community but through the Blu-ray piece.
Oh, yeah, obviously.
And trying to get that standard nailed down and their movies moving on that next generation.
I just don't want to pay for that.
I don't want to pay for it either.
I think that what they're hoping, though, is they're hoping to get a couple of PS3s out there. They're hoping to have some people with some high-def TVs to then, have some people come over to watch movies at their friend's house and go, wow.
But
that's amazing.
I mean, that's what happened with the PSP, remember? You showed off Spider-Man on your PSP.
Okay, no.
And all three of us just went,
oh, no. That's totally different. Here's the reason why it's different. PSP was the entire product. You go if I show you my PSP and you go, wow, I want that. You go buy a PSP for $250, probably too expensive, but you said, it's worth it to me. Mm-hmm. Boom, you're playing movies. If you like the PS3, you shell out $600 for the PS3. Then you have to shell out $4,000 for a TV to watch it. Well, so yeah. It's so not the one product.
I mean, you've got the PSP one. Yeah, you can watch movies on it, but it's not like, boom, you're watching them all of a sudden. You got to get them in the stupid UMB format and either buy them or hack them to get them into
Well, that's why that, I think, has failed. But what I'm saying is you don't have to go buy another device to watch it. Yeah. That's $4,000.
Yeah. Yes, but oddly enough, Sony sells that other device that's $4,000. So...
Yeah, but what I'm saying is...
it sells more of those TVs...
So are you going to buy the PS3 off the gate?
I'm not going to buy the PS3 off
the gate. Why not? You bought the 360.
But I'm just saying that for Sony, it may not be a bad move because, I mean, you know, as a long-term investment...
But it... Well, I mean, keep in mind, I mean, yeah, the games look best on a high-definition TV, but I still imagine they're going to look pretty darn good on a regular...
Well, I agree, you know. But they're going to look as good as a 360, but there's a $200 difference.
But there's no point in getting the Blu-ray technology unless you have something that runs at least 720p.
Exactly. If the $200 difference means Blu-ray, then you have to have the television. If it doesn't mean you can't use it, then you've got a 360.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see what's going to happen. But not only
Sony.
That...
Play alone.
You could, if you want to buy. They also announced that you don't have to spend $600 for the PS3. You can spend $500 and get the 20 gig hard drive during the press conference. Mm-hmm. But they also failed to mention that what you don't get is the HDMI support, memory stick or SD compact flash reading capabilities, or the Wi-Fi support that comes with it, or it doesn't come with the tilt sensing controller that they also displayed.
I'm hearing their tilt sensing controller was quite the botch, though, from everything I've heard.
It didn't look good.
It can detect motion, gross motion only.
Right.
So move your controller physically to the left and it can detect that, but tilt it to the left as though steering or swinging a sword. And it won't pick
up. No. That's the opposite.
It's the opposite.
It's a tilt function only. It does not know where it is in the space.
Ah, okay.
So it doesn't have 3D. Like, you can't move it toward the camera and stab somebody. You can tilt... Like, they had Warhawk. And they were tilting it like a steering wheel and it was flying around. But it looked pretty lame.
Okay, good.
So it could be early development and it's lame because it just didn't seem to look right there. But all I can think of is Super Monkey Ball. Like, that looks like the one thing that you could play with that and have fun with. Like, I'm not going to play Warhawk and have that thing, you know.
But I did notice there was, you know, they had some large PS3 displays, but there was no one there. No, people weren't, it didn't have the same kind of heat as the Wii at all.
Well, again, it was an open environment.
It was an open environment. There were a lot of people crowded around.
They weren't showing an awful lot, though. You know, it's just...
About five games and a lot of trailers.
Yeah, so they had...
A lot of trailers.
I also... should throw out what was that game we mentioned that you saw that looked pretty good? Angel, whatever.
Well, they had the best one there to me was Heavenly Sword.
Oh, Heavenly Sword. I mean, like, that didn't look any different from the Xbox 360.
No, you're right
at all. I mean, like, I you know,
the games looked as good as the Xbox 360.
Yeah,
as
there was nothing that made me think, you know, I mean, I you could have told me it was an Xbox 360 game and I would have. No clue.
Yeah.
Well, for Sony, that's actually a huge step forward because stuff on the PS2 doesn't look anything close to what the Xbox can produce.
Yeah.
You know, we were blown away by the load times on some of the stuff we were seeing. You know,
that's true.
But I mean, I think we all have pretty much figured that the PS3 and the Xbox 360 was going to kind of look the same. I mean, it was nothing. I mean, I guess Sony was telling us it was going to blow us out of the water. But I think everybody through the blogs and all the developers have said, no, they're going to be close the same. Sure, the PS3 might be able to push out a little bit more. But in general, you're not going to see the big difference. And we saw it there. They all looked about the same. I have to say that the 1920 by 1080p version of Gran Turismo looked better than any... it was a 360 game that
better
I saw.
Better than PGR3.
Yeah, it looked better than PGR3. But I
don't know why I got this image in my head, but when you said that, I thought you said the 1920s style version of Gran Turismo. And I'm like, that's awesome. I'm going to drive the Model T.
Actually, we did see that. They had what looked like the Great Race going around the Grand Canyon. So.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool. Oh, okay, on that.
So you heard it wrong, but you thought it right.
But here's some other PS3 titles. Here's a title that will move through PS3s. We saw the Metal Gear Solid 4, Guns of the Patriots, extra long trailer, like the long trailer.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
That looked pretty good.
It looked pretty good. And I was, when we were looking through, I mean, when we were watching, I was thinking, man, this is going to push some severe PlayStation 3s. And in Japan, that,
you know,
that game
Matt's
alone...
Matt's going to scurry on out and get one just for that. You know?
It looks good. It looks good. And you know, part of the reason why it looks good is it looks different than the other ones.
Yeah.
It really does look different. And so, but we only saw the trailer. There was no playable.
Yeah.
Tom Clancy Rainbow Six Vegas looks, I think, amazing, but it looks just as good on the 360. They had a trailer for Assassin's Creed. Did you guys see that?
We missed that. We were looking for it, and we never found it.
I don't think they had a playable version, but there was a trailer that looked pretty awesome. Mm. And it's by the same people who did Prince of Persia, that type of stuff. So
the same core team, even.
Same core team. Okay. So it really looks like it could be pretty cool. Warhawk 3, didn't look that great. They did a Final Fantasy 13 trailer, but you never can tell. 13.
I didn't see 13.
Yeah, they had trailers out there. 12 isn't even out, people, here in the United States, and they already had trailers for 13. And again, it was a complete, cinematic. You never can tell what that actually means. And they had Mobile Suit Gundam, which looked terrible to me.
Yeah.
It looks pretty lame. So, yeah, they had some games out there. But, and what was Eye of Judgment? Did you see that one?
No,
Don?
Ooh, that was fun.
Okay. So the Eye of Judgment is this iToy game where you point the camera down at a table and you put out a gridded map. You buy collectible cards in packs. Okay? You put the card down on the table. The iToy can read the card, and suddenly an animated creature comes out of the card.
Oh, God.
Out of the card on the screen.
Right. And you can play like these, like Yu-Gi-Oh type of things with animations.
I would play that. I'm such a loser. I would so go out and buy this thing.
You know, it was cute to look at the cards, and when the anime comes up, the actual card itself disappears on the screen, so it becomes the anime, but then the fight sequence is all automated at this point.
Okay.
And so you just sort of discard, push that card, and then you use your... Well, you don't use your imagination because it does it in front of you.
Oh. So, there's a lot of it playing for you, but...
Right. It's an interesting concept and idea of being able to buy collectibles and then have them interact.
It's going
to
push a lot of cards.
Did you guys see the Magic the Gathering game?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, which is interesting because basically they've taken the whole buy cards things and now you buy virtual cards.
Yeah, they've had that for like years.
Yeah. I've been playing that since like 2000.
Have you really? Yeah. I've seen. I've never played it before.
I bought $40 worth of cards online, and then I'm done. These are all the cards I will ever own. I will never purchase cards online again.
Yeah, it's a little annoying, actually.
So
a way to use it both ways. I mean, I used to play the old Star Wars game, and it'd be neat to be able to use it in the virtual and the real world. And
that's what they sent you a card.
Well, if you quit the game, if you quit your online account, they will delete all of your cards online and send you hard copies.
Oh, really? So, all right. Yeah.
I mean, you're not just buying virtual cards.
You can actually own
them somewhere. You know,
that's cool.
But they're also making a Marvel Superheroes version of Magic the Gathering 4 online now. So that's the new version I saw.
Is it an MMO? Sorry.
All right. So are we done with Sony? Since we're done with Sony. All right. Oh, by the way, just real quickly, we did see the Blu-ray. We saw some movie trailers on the Blu-ray on a 50-inch or 60-inch screen, 1080p.
Fantastic.
Looks awesome.
Fantastic.
Clean. So those of you who do have a 1080p high-def television and you're waiting to see some clean movies.
It looked like film. It looked like a film transfer had been done correctly. It wasn't video-ish. It was
like being in the movie theater.
And for anybody that has a high-def TV that they watch over the air or original stuff, it looked just as
good. PS3 is for you if you have that television. It really is. So, okay, let's move on to Microsoft.
Just software in general, I guess.
Well, let's hit Microsoft.
Okay.
Because I've got things to talk about Microsoft. Well, it makes it easier to like keep track of things. We've done Sony. We've done...
Yeah, except I have no idea what platforms my things were on. So it makes it easier for you.
All right. So you don't know what games... Okay. Let's just randomly talk about games then. Let me talk about Microsoft because, you know, they've made some announcements. Their conference talked a lot about Live, Xbox Live, which is cool. They've got a whole new set of downloaded Live arcade games that look cool, mm-hmm. including Luminous, which, if you all remember, that was the really cool game on the PSP. It was kind of a music Tetris type of game. It was really fun. And strangely enough, Microsoft has got a download of that, and it plays music videos in the background, and it's timed out to the music. And I'm sure you'll be able to buy music online and add it to your Luminous soundtracks. Anyway, that's coming. They talked about Live Anywhere, where you can stay with your live community on your PC, your cell phones, so that you can communicate between, you know, people playing online on Xbox Live and your cell phones and all sorts of stuff.
Which is strange to me. I'll admit that. I understand the applications of it. I understand,
but no,
why
what it
someone
was,
might want to do it. But
what I liked about, can I have my MSM connected to my phone. What is cool is sometimes I'm here at home doing mm-hmm. things, diddling around, and Matt or somebody might be online and want to play with me. There's no way of getting that message to me unless my phone goes beep. And I look, and they'll send me an invite, and I go, oh, cool, I'm not doing anything right now. Then I can jump online.
So how far do you think we are from Microsoft's version of Skype Out?
Oh,
I'm sure. Where you're using VoIP through the Xbox 360 yeah. and Xbox Live and able to call you on your phone.
I'm sure we're very close. Because now you can talk to lot. You can talk online with your PC, can talk to their
Didn't
Xbox
Microsoft
Live.
Buy Skype? I'm trying to remember who bought them.
eBay.
eBay, yeah. bought,
eBay
Skype.
Bought Skype for
That's
billions.
Right. I forgot about that.
Anyway, and then of course they announced their HDVD add-on drive. So, I don't think we got a price. I'm sure it'll be like $200-$250 though. So anybody who wants to invest in the counter technology of Blu-ray, could buy the HD DVD drive and hook that up to your Xbox 360 and play HD movies that way. I don't know how that works, but they did announce the box. So, you know, that was kind of their conference. It was pretty cool. All right. So games.
Yeah. Well, one of the things we saw, just walking in was the Mortal Kombat game. Did you see that by any chance?
I'm done. That series seems okay. So old and tired. It seems like bullshit
to
me.
I gotta say, what was interesting about this was we've talked before about one of the problems with the fighting game genres is that you can't create your own characters with their own styles, their own face, their own mm-hmm. moves. Well, that's what this is doing now. Mm. So,
well, I mean, like Soul Calibur 3, when that came out, mm-hmm. they had characters you could generate yourself.
Right. But you said it was very clunky.
It was clunky
and didn't work very
and
well.
What pissed me off was that you couldn't create a fighting style. You picked their weapon, and then they fought appropriately with that weapon, and that was
right.
it. With the new Mortal Kombat, you can create a fighting style. You know, like, your attack is this from Pencilat. You know,
right.
this move is from Judo. This move is Taekwondo. And you can assemble your moves individually.
That's cool.
I was impressed by that.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. So,
that, and I think that comes out for all systems eventually.
I'm sure. Yeah, but I'm just
but
happy.
Peter's going to name a whole bunch of things and not tell anybody how to get a hold of it.
What impressed me about it, though, was it looked very much like the last Mortal Kombat, and I sort of instinctively rolled my eyes as soon as I saw it. Right, I am not a fan of the Mortal Kombat franchise anymore.
It's dumb. It's so dumb.
The last one was so bad, so clunky.
The last one?
Okay, the last three. Everything since Mortal Kombat 3.
Two.
Like, 2 was my favorite. 3 went downhill a little bit. And 4, I was like, what the hell are you thinking? But
Ascension. Wasn't that one of them?
Oh, it's awful. But this one actually returned to kind of a smooth gameplay. They definitely improved the movement of the characters. It was much better. We actually had a good time playing.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So, we're not raving about this one, but we thought it was really interesting.
But it was like, okay, Mortal Kombat redeemed a little bit, you know?
Clearly, God of War 2.
Yeah, PS2.
Was really interesting. Looks like the first one. The first one was a ton of fun.
Yeah. It doesn't look any different.
But, you know, I'd be happy to
play it. It's PS2. I mean, it's not like it's going to get better looking.
No, but, I mean, the gameplay looked exactly the same. The level design looked the same.
Yeah.
The characters you're fighting look the same.
Yeah.
So it's sort of an extension.
Yeah. I mean, he's supposed to have new weapons. He's supposed to have, you know, new abilities and new.
Sabo.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's going to be different, but it's not going to be.
But in the
God of War 3.
In the God of War vein, we already spoke about it briefly, heavily sword. blew my socks off. It looked like the next God of War. It looked like God of War 3, you know?
Yeah. I didn't have as strong of a reaction when I saw it.
Really?
I mean, it, you know, like, I it looked interesting to me. It looked pretty to me.
It looked just like God of War.
But I didn't see anything about it that made me... I couldn't tell in terms of... part of God of War was the story and, you know, how things went down. And
no,
I didn't see anything. God of War 2 could suck with story.
But,
it could, but...
The smoothness of the combat that I was watching... impressed the hell out of me.
No, I'll buy that,
like,
though.
And just, the camera and the mini game aspect. I mean, it looked like God of War.
Yeah. It looked like a complete clone of God of War. Don't get me wrong.
And a good one.
But beautifully done. Yeah.
The best PS3 one.
Yeah.
Did anybody see Rule of Rose?
No.
Okay, this was...
Yeah.
It was mainly just a trailer, but it was really neat. It was really like... It's one of these sort of... it looks basically like it's about a young girl... and her dog at this boarding school or something like that. And she's maybe 12, would you say, or something like that?
Probably 14, 15.
14, 15. Yeah. Where it looks like everybody else goes crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's one of these sort of mood shows.
And you don't know what system that's on?
It was being demoed on PS3, I think.
Really?
No, it wasn't PS2. Okay.
But just the storytelling in this looked really interesting. And it looks like the dog... plays a huge role in the story.
It looks like you play two characters. Yeah. This is my thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
One character manipulates objects, like the flashlight, the weapon, that sort of stuff. And then the dog is your hands. The dog goes out and gets things and brings it back to you.
Yeah,
right.
You know, so and can smell things, follow scent trails and stuff.
Right.
You follow the dog. I mean, it looked like a really...
They showed a scene where, like, you know, you're walking along and the dog... You're moving in a direction and the dog stops, looks back... and starts growling and backing away at something that you can't see. You know, so it's got extra senses. It helps you detect things. But it was this is what we were talking about. All of the games we saw, I think almost all... No, literally all the games we saw this year were action-oriented, and almost none were mood-based, right? There were no Fatal Frames. There were no Silent Hills.
Yeah, this was the only thing that fell in that category that we saw.
This one was very much a Fatal Frame-style game, and was very... It looked good. I think it'll be out in 2007, I'm guessing.
We were excited about it, So, Dead Rising, we talked about that last year. Did you see that this time?
No, I that doesn't look... I saw it last year. I didn't even go look for it. It just looks like State of Emergency 3.
Well...
No.
Well, we looked at it, and the whole videotaping somebody getting mauled by the zombies was a little morbid.
Yeah.
I mean, that part was cool, of it, okay. But I found myself interested in the morbid.
Well, I mean, basically, this is a game where you're a reporter, and suddenly it's Night of the Living Dead, and there are thousands of zombies around.
Yeah, right.
You know, and if you and you're trying to get through the game and save.
You're
the
in a mall,
that are
just
living.
Like Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah,
and State of Emergency.
Right, and
no, because you have no weapons. You have weapons, but your weapons are not sufficient to win a scenario.
I saw one where you had a lightsaber.
Huh?
What?
They had a level where you picked
in
up a
Dead
lightsaber.
Rising?
Yeah,
I didn't see that.
Well, lawnmowers.
Oh yeah. This is a mass carnage game. This game is designed. I mean, this is.
I'm just wondering what you do on level two. Like, after you've gone through your 1,000 zombies in level one, what do you do in level two?
My sense of this game is that it starts off and you know you've got a baseball bat, and then once you go up, as you go up in levels, you start to get more sophisticated things, like, for example, the lawnmower.
Yeah.
Where you start.
I saw a guy trying to take on a zombie with a mannequin.
And then
it's cracking us
different
up.
Environments. Do it in a mall. Do it in a park.
The charm for me though
was not necessarily the carnage. One, the character designs were great. Like they were really funny. The writing was hilarious. I found the game charming with a sensibility to it that I've never seen in a zombie genre game.
It did sort of look like The Sims Go Zombie. You know, in that sort of caricature type way.
Mm-hmm.
But
God of War was, you know, in a way the same thing. You just fight, and, you know, I thought it was a great game. So, you know, I feel like, if they can somehow keep that interest of, you know, okay, baseball bat, and then it's a, you know, if somehow that does affect the gameplay and you feel like that is satisfying as you increase, then, that seems cool to me.
So, some of the fun seems seems to be that the characters that you're playing with who are alive at certain points can get killed.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, like instead of just these mindless zombies, one of them will have the name Doug over his head.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, you can see, you know.
We saw a scene where, like, I'm not clear on exactly what had happened, but it looked like the player had put boxes over some of the zombies' heads.
Oh, yeah, that was very
funny. So the zombies couldn't see where they are anymore.
Right.
And the zombies are wandering out into the crowd, blocking other zombies as you're trying to run
around.
Because
they can't see. Yeah, it was that was pretty funny, actually. So.
I think this is the one that if you get infected, you have, like, a certain time limit to get, like, you know, the antidote or something if you get bit or...
I don't know. That would be Resident Evil.
Yeah.
That game had that. I don't know if this does too. Oh, but okay. Resident sure Evil was definitely that format.
I didn't know if this one didn't seem like it had a recourse once you got bit.
Oh, then you're just out.
Actually, this one, the way it looked, it was damage based. You get bit.
Okay.
But you know, you go and you eat some potato chips and you're fine.
Right.
Know? I mean, I'm serious. That's exactly what the guy was doing. He's running around with a bag of Fritos, you know, going like this, and you see his health going back up.
And that was an Xbox game. That's a 360 game.
But it just looks like it's a lot of fun, is what you know. But and the real question is to wait and see if, like, Destroy All Humans, which was also a fun game but became boring pretty quickly.
It looked exactly the same.
The question is to wait and see if this loses its charm after about an hour of play.
Yeah.
So we'll have to wait and see on that.
Well, let me pipe in since we're now on Xbox a couple ones.
Yeah.
Did you guys check out Battle for Middle Earth 2?
That was one of Peter's favorites.
I was so impressed with
that. All right, I got my hand. Did you play it, son?
I played it. Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So this is the game that I think a lot of other companies are waiting to see what happens, because we all know that real-time strategy games are absolute disasters on consoles. They do not work. Mm. They don't work in any way, shape, or form. We've gone through 4 or 5 of them in the past, and they've been so poor that no one has... It's just something you just stay away from. Except for EA has tried it this time with Battle for Middle-Earth 2. Part of the reason why I think that this has a chance is that even the PC version is a very simplified version of a real-time strategy game.
Mm-hmm.
But I got my hands on it. It's easy to select all the people you can on your screen. It's easy to target certain ones. Mm-hmm. It's easy to get through the menu systems. They've got it. You pull a trigger, and it goes into this. You know, it shoots out your options, and you just click through the options and then select. It looks beautiful. It looks amazing. Hundreds of people on the screen at the same time. It's Lord of the Rings. Ding 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 ding.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's actually going to work. I'm picking up. This also a game that's coming out in like a month and a half. It's actually coming out soon.
Yeah,
I agree. It looked like a lot of fun to play the game, but I had a slightly alternative experience with it,
mm-hmm.
right? In that I discovered, for those of you who have live-in girlfriends or wives or boyfriends or husbands and you like to play games, they're not going to enjoy watching you play this at all. It is probably the most boring thing to watch I've ever seen.
You can't use that as a...
No, yeah. I'm just warning you. Your significant other is going to be like, no.
You'd assume that your significant others actually watch you play any video games anyway.
I actually don't want that to.
But you're not going to... I mean, this is like watching someone play Civilization. It's a strategy game. It's not, you know...
Warcraft. People enjoy watching Warcraft.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
you've
got to be kidding me.
Some people do.
Warcraft is not a strategy game. It's not... I mean, I'm not saying it's... No.
World of Warcraft?
Warcraft. Oh, I apologize. Sorry. I was thinking World of Warcraft.
Like one of them. Yeah.
Well, you know. Okay.
A little bit. I don't know.
But anyway, so I'm going to buy it. You can play up to 4 people online battles. I mean, I don't know. Peter, you getting it? We're going to battle online? Let's go.
I'm definitely going to rent it.
All right.
You know, it looks like fun.
Well, and the big catch on it that sort of makes it work as an RTS on a console is that they've taken, and instead of moving the mouse around the screen, you're moving the whole screen and keeping the pointer in the center. And that's sort of the kicker of it. That frees up one whole control button, so you got 4 more buttons you can use for other things.
Yeah. That was the brilliance of it.
Yeah. It a really simple solution to that.
And it makes it so quick to move around the screen, you know.
It's kind of got that first-person shooter feel in a way where you target in the middle, you know,
your
target stays in the middle, so you're not trying to mouse around with your stick, the thumb stick, which has always been the big, absolute disaster on those things.
Yeah.
I would love to see strategy games make it to the console, though.
Oh, me too. I didn't own consoles for a long time because you couldn't play a strategy game on them. That's what I loved. Yeah,
when we get to the PC, we saw a couple of those things that we want to talk about. Did you guys see Huxley?
We saw
it
a little bit of it.
We
didn't get a good look at it.
So there was like 13 or 14 massively multiplayer online something.
I know.
Made by four developers, it seems too.
Or at least they just use the same textures.
I've got to say, I was incredibly disappointed this year in that so many things looked like World of Warcraft. You know, like they looked about the video quality of World of Warcraft. They looked like they played somewhat like World of Warcraft.
And World of Warcraft didn't invent that gameplay.
Yeah.
No, it didn't. But
I found most.
I mean, I wouldn't give that to.
It's the game design of World of Warcraft, but the art design of Final Fantasy was the one that was being ripped off the most. The Final Fantasy XI game. You know, like half of the MMORPGs that we were sampling there used the same kind of elongated humans, you know, the very pointy armor, you know, pointed sharp cloth wearing stuff.
Well, I bet you didn't say that about Huxley, the massively multiplayer online first person shooter.
Right. Yes.
Nothing that like any of those. This is the one MMO that stood out for me. I'm not sure if it's good. It looks like a first person shooter. It kind of even looks a little Unreal Tournament to me. What did you think, Dylan? It was.
Well, it had at the end of it, I came away with it sort of Battlefield in a persistent universe.
Yeah,
where it's a first person shooter. There is some cooperation. You can break up into squads of four and then build up from there. There are some side missions and three different races, two which people can play, one which is total NCPs or AI.
Mm-hmm. But they ends up being, I think,
I don't know,
instances between four and 100 people.
Yeah.
So they had towns, again, that have, you know, thousands of people. 5,000.
A server could hold 5,000 people, and 2,600 could play on this together at any given time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's just like an exponentially large version of Battlefield is what it seemed like. And watching the guy ran us through the demo and the gameplay.
But they had a couple of cool concepts, one of which was, if you stayed in your four-man squad together, you got a team bonus on certain things. So if you guys healed and just ran off and just did your own thing, somebody who stuck close together in your squads would give healing bonuses. They'd get all these different team-type bonuses.
Were there character classes?
It wasn't several character
classes. But it wasn't class-based. It's not like you stay in a team because you have to have somebody to give you health, a medic. It was a team of four running around regenerated together better than somebody off on their own.
Mm-hmm. Right. So it had some interesting things. But the character classes, there's several races and all. It's all, it's a massively multiplayer shooter.
It's one of those things where I think I wouldn't buy it when it first comes out. I'd wait to see how many people play it and what it's like. I mean, have any of you played the just the first-person shooter game where you spawn in and you die because there's so many people there and so many bullets flying that there's nowhere to go? You're going to die as soon as you spawn
in. That's what's interesting about what it sounds like is here, in a way, it's like Dungeons & Dragons Online. You go into the big city, you role-play, you do this and that, and there's, things going on. But then you hear about these missions. You grab a team of people ranging from solo to four and up. So if you want to just grab with your, take a group of your four of your friends and go through a four-man game, you can do that. If you want to go, if they have giant battlefields where it's 100 on 100, you can go in there and it's full-on Battlefield 1942-esque with 100 people. And yes, that might be one of those things where you take four steps and die.
When I was... My brother used to play this game. It was a pretty neat game, and I wish I could remember the name of it. But basically, the whole concept of the game was thousands of people on one server fighting each other, at any one given time, and that you were trying to take over the planet, but they split you up into three different groups.
Mm-hmm.
And as new people came in, if one side was losing, but had too few people, they would add the new people to that side to rebalance the sides. So it was kind of fascinating to watch the map as you would see people take over – half the world, and then suddenly it would be someone else that would start to take over half the world.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the brilliant things that they did was you could respawn anywhere you wanted, you know, and then you could hop in a plane and fly to where you wanted and jump out of the plane and land, or you could go and you could grab these mobile teleport respawn locations that would be invisible, and you could drive over to where you were going to attack, right? You would plant the thing, and then, you know, they couldn't see it, but they could see where people were coming from, and you could suddenly spawn right next to the location that you're attacking. So you never had that experience of just popping up and getting slaughtered. You know, I mean, you could have it, but if it was really bad, you could always just spawn at a more distant location and come in from
another Battlefields like that
location.
Battlefield 1942 are all the ones that you have multiple outposts. If you want to spawn in the hot zone,
you can, and
you
take
can,
risk.
And just try to risk it, or you can spawn one back, get in the tank, drive over, and knock the snot out.
Yeah,
I don't know, you know, how this
I
is going to work.
I think I'd get more frustrated with an MMORPG than sort of just a first person standard shooter, though. For the first person shooter, you don't lose anything by just getting shot.
Well, we also don't know.
Most MMORPGs, there's a penalization system for when you die.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that will work because, you know, unlike most games, MMOs like, where you rarely die, this would be lots of death. So they can't penalize you too much.
Warcraft, you mean?
Well, Warcraft is a very light one in the fact that your items are damaged every time you die. More traditional ones, you don't know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Whenever you die, your durability on your items goes down.
No. Are you sure?
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was only if you died and didn't run back.
No.
Oh, really?
But you also don't die that often.
It's true.
I mean, not like a first person.
Like a warrior dies a lot when they're doing a group.
But not like first person shooter dying.
But for example, City of Heroes, the penalization is an experience penalization.
Right.
You are you have to regain experience at a slower rate every time you die.
Yeah, that kind of sucks.
Yeah. So in an FPS where you die quick in an FPS, that's the nature of an FPS. Mm-hmm. If there's a penalization system and you just get mowed down every time you spawn in, I'm sure.
I gotta say, I never even noticed the damage thing when you died on Warcraft. It was never, you know. I mean, I played forever and had no idea.
So. It'll be interesting to find out if they push the FPS piece or the MMO piece.
Yeah.
Because
if
it's a push of the FPS, then some of these concerns might not be there.
Yeah. But another interesting thing that it will be PC and Xbox 360, and everybody will be playing together, apparently. So who knows?
I'm surprised there's not more of that. Like, I expected to see a lot more of that once the 360 kind of got its online community going.
Yeah, well, you know? It's just started. I mean, it's only been out for a couple months, so who knows. Did you guys...
Oh, I was going to say, speaking of this, World of Warcraft really disappointed me. I mean, just really...
Well, it's got everything they said that it was going to have.
No. I mean, it disappointed me just because, among other things, it looks like more of the same, which I understand is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, just in their advertising, you know, I really think they missed the ball because they have this great trailer that they used for World of Warcraft in the beginning.
So this is World of Warcraft of the Burning Crusades is what
the Burning Crusades,
about.
Right. And when World of Warcraft first came out, they had this great cinematic that was just fantastic that showed you all the characters and showed you all the character, you know. And just you were like when you saw this, you got really excited to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now that they've added these two new character classes, which is their big thing, they go back and they show you basically a edited down version of the exact same cinematic, you know, where
for the first game,
and it's the exact same trailer you saw before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, except that when it gets to the point where they should be introducing these two new characters with this high quality, schnazzy, just amazing cinematic to make you go, "Oh yeah, they look awesome," they cut to in-game footage of gameplay that is like so stiff and awkward that literally it's like the guys walk up and then they go to kneel and there's no like, you know, it's like they're standing and then they're kneeled. You know, it's like, I mean, it was just they were actually showing, they were making their own game look awful by putting this great cinematic and then cutting to in-game footage. It was such a poor choice. I was really disappointed.
I think they showed up knowing that they're going to sell those no matter what they did.
They might be, but you know.
I mean, they've got World of Warcraft. Everybody's playing it. And they're the
and you know what?
They're the king of the
EverQuest was Warcraft before, and if you You know, if you kind of just ride on your laurels, you ride into oblivion.
I agree, but I think they came in there saying, "Hey, we're World of Warcraft, bitch. What do you want to do? We're coming out with another one."
If there's enough new content to really bring back everyone who, you know, got tired and, you know, decided they'd come back when the expansion comes out.
Well, and so the new classes give you an ability to start over on a new character. Well,
actually, this is a problem.
Oh.
There are new races, not new classes. So you could play the same classes you've played before, just with a new character model.
So a new character model and maybe a balance within how the class works.
Yeah, it'll have new abilities, but those racial abilities, I mean, they're nice, but they don't change the
game.
We
never really use them.
It's not like having a new class where you get a whole set of new things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although the socketed items and the jeweler is interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I just wasn't that interested in it.
And it seems to me that Blizzard, this was the smallest space at E3 I've ever seen Blizzard take up. And it was sort of Blizzard acknowledging we got nothing else right now.
Well, what was the game that Blizzard canceled?
StarCraft Ghost.
Yeah, and they didn't even have the full square they usually have. It looked like they'd borrowed a few square feet from another company and set up a couple places.
A little inside information, we heard some employees of Blizzard talking. They scheduled a guy to come in to talk about Ghost, like an actor or somebody. Mm-hmm. They didn't unschedule him. I don't know what the deal was, but they were still planning. Some people were still planning on making a presence on StarCraft Ghost there. That's a little. I'm not sure exactly where that screw up happened, but
it sucks.
Did you guys see Splinter Cell? The new Splinter Cell for the 360,
nope.
And I think it's coming out.
Did not.
We missed.
Awesome looking. I mean, it's just freaking crazy graphics. Looks unbelievable. But Dylan and I saw these demos of like him swimming under frozen ice, and when you look up, you can see through thick ice, like the bad guys, and you can like break through, pull them through, and it looks amazing. It looks like real ice. Or
the two big things that happened, as it was described to us, one of them was just the graphics and everything are processing in real time on the 360 the way it was developed to do. The second thing is that the gameplay is coming out of the dark night rooms and always in the shadows, and you have to be stealthy, but it's now outside and it's bright, but you can go into the shadows. So what was really interesting was watching, and we've seen this in other games on the 360, where you go outside and you're sort of blinded for a second while your eyes adjust, go inside and they're dark. And
that's
so
cool. The dynamic lighting range.
The thing I liked is you could actually see Sam for once.
Yeah. Well, the other cool thing that was described to us, and this is a great idea, is there's a little bit of role-playing now to it, to the story.
Mm-hmm.
They force you to make these crazy decisions that none of which sound good.
Well, as a double agent, they push the choose-your-own-adventure. You go into a cinematic realm, and then you make a choice. The choice that they showed us online was you're trying to join a terrorist cell, and they want you to kill an innocent person that they have there. And you get to choose whether you're going
to
kill them.
To prove that
you're... Or whether
you're
or not. You want to be part of the crowd. You want to be a terrorist. This is how you prove that you're part of the family now.
And you can shoot the guy. You can kill him dead on. Or you can refuse to kill him, and then they don't want you in their terrorist group.
Well, and each direction has consequences in the gameplay.
And there's a lot of these choices. They said they're all throughout the game. They want to make sure they want it to be so that Sam Fisher joining, being a double agent, isn't easy. It's not just you get to join the bad guys for a little bit and use their weapons and then run around and shoot. It's that there are consequences to dabbling in the evil world of terrorism, you know.
We saw something similar to that. We'll talk about it later on, but this game called Witcher.
Yeah,
but
we can talk about it now if you want. I was really...
Was that a PC game? Or
It's a PC game that was downstairs in Kentai Hall, which means Kentai Hall is the, oh, please, please, please let us be a video game development company area.
Yeah, I've got a whole section on that.
It's the people who are trying to get into the industry that are
Red Octane
legit.
Was down there, too.
Well, Red Octane is now officially one of the big boys.
Yeah.
So
they
had bought
there.
That before they got bought out by their new parent company.
The thing was that the artwork on this, first of all, this is a Polish company that's doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like never heard of them before. What were they called? They were called
CD Projekt.
CD Projekt.
With a K.
Yeah, and
all of them were Polish.
All of them were,
like, half the time I'm listening very carefully what they're trying to say.
Yes,
trying to understand.
Yes,
them.
And you know, so they're coming completely out of left field.
Mm-hmm.
Now with one of the things that they did though is they hired an Oscar award winning animator.
Mm-hmm.
To do their cinematics.
Mm-hmm.
So we saw the artwork on their poster, thought it was interesting, went down. We saw the cinematic, which was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It was
just
easily one of the best cinematics I saw at E3.
Absolutely. Wow. It was amazing. Yeah. And then we went in and we heard their pitch, and their pitch started out amazing. It was really great because these guys clearly have the best of intentions. They're really trying to be cutting edge. They're really
enthused.
Trying to think. Yeah, they're very enthused. They're trying to think outside the box. And I think Don and I both were not sure that in reality it was going to wind up being as great as they were were aiming for. But they were clearly on some level succeeding.
Yeah,
so
they felt their gameplay was new and exciting and fresh. It was hilarious. The guy that was running the presentation stepped in about once every 2 minutes to say, "Yes, gameplay is very fresh.
So what?
Very new."
So what's why are you bringing it up? I mean, was there something?
Well, there's one major selling point that ties into what you were talking about.
Oh, okay.
For me, I found it very interesting.
Yeah.
The way they had set it up, you had to make the same choices. Here is a man who was part of this bandit group that you've just killed,
mm-hmm.
right? He's tied up to a stake. And he says, "Please let me go. I just held their horses. I would never do any of those things."
Mm-hmm.
And he's telling the truth.
Right.
And then you have the choice. Do I let him go? Do I kill him? Do I wait for more witchers to come and help me make the decision?
Oh.
And what they showed you is that if you make the decision to let him go, right, he tells you the truth. He gives you true information, which lets you achieve your goals. But he also gets recaptured by the bandits and tells him that he told you all this stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Which triggers an event later in the game, not 5 minutes later, about 15 hours down the road, for example.
Oh, okay.
Where you will get ambushed and your love interest in the game will be killed. Right?
Interesting.
So the way they were setting it up was, it's exactly what you're talking about. Choices make you triggering other events, but which we've seen before. But those events are always immediate in video games.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
This one's setting up things where you can't just go back to a save game and decide, let's try another one.
And one of the things that they really were saying is it's not just making choices between good and evil, but always choices between lesser evils, you know?
Yeah,
and
that's
which one
cool.
you want to make. So they had a sophisticated concept in that in that area, which was really interesting. Now, the combat and the actual gameplay...
They were trying to tell us how good it was, and as we're watching it, he's like, "Look, I can do all of my combat with one hand on the mouse." And I'm like, "That's not the sign of a good game,"
Well, the combat system was interesting in the sense that that there's only one button to click, okay, and that you can also use the keyboard if you want to move the character around or to change things, but basically when your character's fighting, he's fighting.
Mm-hmm.
He starts combat, and that periodically there's a flash or a change in the icon, which indicates that you have to click a button right at that moment to keep your combat. And now to keep your character winning in the combat.
To continue a kata, more like to you know, so like the standard slashy is just something you can always do.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're at a certain point in the sword swing, if you click the button, he'll come up in an upward arc.
Oh,
if
you
wait and allow it to pass, there may be another one that will allow you to do a leg sweep with your sword.
So it's sort of a little mini game going on during the attack or a rhythm-based thing.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Now, the way he moves his sword, they actually – what is it called when you they captured it from real people, correct? That's why it looks
motion
so good.
Motion capture.
It was motion captured from real people fighting.
Which,
so
they were
looks,
pitching the hell out of it, but that's not new.
Well, no. But it did look good. I mean, the character, the way the character moved the sword, the way he fought, did look great.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But actually, the world that they were in didn't look that interesting to me.
It didn't look unique. It looked like a medieval Polish countryside,
Yeah.
How many video games have Polish countryside?
Well, I was actually going to say, if they'd done the voiceovers in Polish, it might have actually been fairly interesting.
Yeah,
felt like you're in a foreign land. And
now the other thing is that the world that they're setting this in is the world of Polish fairy tales. And there's a writer who writes this, and this is also another thing that I thought was interesting about their pitch, although we didn't see it in real life. We didn't see it impact what we were seeing the game in, but they basically described it as There's an author who writes in the world of Polish fairy tales, where there's, you know, elves, dwarves, etc. You know, and his stuff is very similar in some ways to modern real day issues. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, you know, even though this is a medieval thing, there's terrorism,
right?
You know, and et cetera, et cetera. So it was interesting. It was intriguing.
Cool.
So what was the name of the game again?
The Witcher.
Any release dates or anything from them?
Well, I know they're currently looking for a distributor. That's one of the reasons why they're there. They're trying to figure out a way to get their game into the United States.
Right.
They don't even have an ESRB rating yet, which makes me wonder, you know, what they're doing. But
I suspect it's going to be mature. You know, with the blood and the gore that we saw, you know.
But I'm also wondering about, because, like, there were some screenshots they showed as far as, like, these are the events that will unfold. And I'm looking down at the bottom, and there's a naked woman with a bare butt hanging out of the screen. I'm like, there's going to be some, like, sexual content in this game, too.
Well, it's going to be mature. It's already going to be mature.
Yeah, baby.
Well,
we all
know there's a difference between European mature and U.S. mature.
Exactly, exactly. Right? I sat on this ESRB console, and they were saying, you know, what the European market considers to be kind of tame, we consider to be absolutely obscene. So
we're so scammed up.
We'd have to check out that game really thoroughly before anyone could really consider it.
Can I get through some quick? I'm not going to go through in depth some Microsoft games to finish up 360 for me. We saw Time Shift, looked interesting.
The key thing in Time Shift is that you can slow down, stop, reverse time, and you have to do those things to get through the level puzzles.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It incorporates it deeply into the level play.
And
that's its gimmick.
And interesting concept.
I think they're also trying to get that to work in multiplayer, too.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. We'll see.
Matt was talking about this. He said that one of the things that he saw that he thought was so interesting was, for example, part of the game is that you have to raise up this elevator to get into it to go down. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you let go of the elevator, it will start to fall instantly. So you have to stop time.
So you turn the winch, raise it up.
Turn the winch, raise it up, stop time, and have to run and get on the elevator before time starts moving again.
It's kind of, I mean, Blinks did it. It's kind of the stuff you saw in Blinks, but a little more grittier. So.
Okay.
Viva Pinata, which I thought looked interesting. It was kind of, did you see this?
No.
It's this crazy, like, virtual sim pet farming sim.
RTS.
RTS. It's on the Xbox 360. You start with this just dirt land and an inchworm, a pinata inchworm, and you start planting little grass seeds.
You plant little seeds and little things, and little pinatas grow.
Grass grows. And then, depending on the environment, different types of pinatas, because pinatas come from this, of course, land of pinatas. Different types of pinatas become attracted to the farmland that you... So it becomes like a virtual pet thing. And anyway, it looks beautiful. I mean, the graphics are like freaking unbelievable, but...
Well, and it's... They had some multiplayer elements that were really interesting. So every different pet has its own little tags, sort of like a shirt tag, and it works like sort of like an RFID, where it'll tell you when it came around, what accessories you've given it, when that happened, different things that have occurred to it, how it's leveled up, or different things. You can take these, crate them up. This is the way the woman put it. You can take a pinata, crate it up, and send it across to your friend through Xbox Live, and they can uncrate it, and it'll be there with everything else on it, and then they can add it into their world as well.
You can, like, I can give you a pin. I can crate up my pinata with all this crazy eyeglasses and all that, and send. And depending, and it's attitude. Like, they have attitudes depending on how you've treated it and what the environment.
Okay, that's interesting.
So this is like this reminds me a little bit of Spore. Which was also there.
This is like Nintendogs meets RTS meets The Sims type thing.
Yeah. It's kind of like that.
Well, Spore in the sense that did you see the Spore?
Oh yeah.
Okay. And have you seen
if there was a highlight at E3, it was Spore.
Right.
I mean,
we've talked about Spore before, but Spore, you know, you start off as a single celled organism and you work up to create, you know, a race, you know, with very. You can design
you
just about
vertebrate
anything,
and then you can add different components to it.
I think isn't Harvest Moon on Nintendo, or what's that game where you're like a farmer on Nintendo? Not Harvest Moon.
It's not Harvest Moon. Harvest Town? No.
I don't know, but it's like these kind of farming games. Anyway, it looked interesting. I'm curious to see where it goes. It looks beautiful, but it's also a freaking game that didn't have blood and guts in it. I mean, it's just like, come on.
They were rare this year.
I agree.
Everything was freaking violent this time around.
Well, and Xbox, I think Microsoft's trying to get into kids and at least get a little bit
of a niche. That was like
the
only one I saw.
Nintendo market. But that's their push. That one game is their push and attempt into that. Yeah.
What platform was Okami on? The one
that's
with the paintbrush?
PS2.
PS2?
Yeah.
That was very interesting design of a game, although I don't think I ever want to play it.
It looks good, but did you guys see Prey?
Yeah.
That looked interesting. Spirit walking and portals, gravity changes.
The spirit walking looked interesting, where you have to die or have an out-of-body experience for a little bit, go and have combat that way, and then come back in.
And invade your body again. Lost Planet, which you can download on the Xbox 360. It's a demo right now. Mm-hmm. I think it plays fun. I'm kind of curious to see where, if it's repetitive.
It's two sticks, or that it's an Arctic game, and mm-hmm. that you get cold over time, and things, when they die, they freeze, so you have to keep yourself hot. And the other one is that you have the shoulder movement. So you can turn, by using the shoulder keys, you can turn 90 degrees, shoot at something, and then come right back.
Right.
But you move it's like
you snap
four
over.
Or five times quicker than you would by just normal turning. So it allows real fast, bam, bam,
Haven't seen it. So
yeah, it's interesting.
That sounds good.
That thing also had a neat design in the sense that at least some of what I saw reminded me a little bit of The Matrix. And
yeah, it had a little bit of problem with
that. It had a little creepiness to it, in the sense that it was in The Matrix, when you see the things chasing the ships,
mm-hmm. the flying
the flying things, or when you see the
robo squids,
a lot of the stuff resembled that a little bit, which was interesting. But
I think the two though big ones for Microsoft, Gears of War looks like the game that's coming out this year. It looks freaking amazing. It has the type mm-hmm. of gameplay that I like, which is not the run and gun, but the jump behind a wall, shoot over the, over the wall, jump, crouch again, move up to the other wall,
I believe they called it crouch and pop.
Yeah, the stop and pop.
Yeah, stop and pop.
Stop and pop. They also have this great, cool sprint feature. When you start running, they can't, and running and ducking, that kind of like low run thing. Mm-hmm. The camera gets real low and starts kind of shaking like a cameraman's following the guy.
That's cool.
And it really just looks amazing. I think everybody should go online and check out at least the videos. But that's coming out this fall. I think that's the big PS3
or Xbox
PS3, the anti PS3 software for Microsoft. And then I don't know. Did you guys all see the Halo 3 trailer?
No,
did not.
Oh, you can download it on the 360.
Okay,
it's there. I have it. But the Halo 3 trailer came out.
Teaser.
So
all on Earth.
It's on Earth. At least this teaser was. So my prediction of a full trailer was, it didn't work. In fact, it was. I was very far off on my. But next year we'll see if my my trailer.
You said vision. Trailer. You didn't say teaser.
Does it look good?
I'm standing by that.
They did.
It's
have
a
the
teaser.
Ethereal voices. He was right about that.
Okay.
At the very beginning, you had a little ethereal voice.
Yeah. It's a cool teaser, but it doesn't say, I can't tell you if the game looks good.
Okay.
It hints at the stuff we want to have happened.
Okay.
So I'll show it to you guys, but check out online, definitely.
Does anybody have I have a biggest disappointment for what I saw while I was there. I was wondering if you guys have anything. My biggest disappointment was Shadowrun. I mean, Shadowrun is, it's a role-playing game, and I like it a lot. It has its problems, but it's, their video game for Shadowrun is basically an arena fighting game where you shoot at each other. And that's all it is. It's all it is.
Why would you take a role-playing game, make a video game out of it, and then remove all role-playing game elements from it?
And this asshole that is explaining the game is desperately trying to convince us that it's still a role-playing game, because when you kill people, you make money, and the money you can use to upgrade your equipment, and that's why it's still a role-playing game.
Okay.
So Tiger Woods golf is a role-playing game.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, so Sonic.
Well, I mean, it was the graphics were interesting. No, they weren't.
Amazing, they were awful.
But
they weren't great.
Well, like for example, you could buy a little hand glider and fly up, and you know the hand glider erupts from your back. It was pretty. You know?
You had technology, you had spells, and yeah. it looked completely uninteresting.
Yeah, I stared at the screen for like 5 seconds and just moved on. I didn't even want to learn about it.
For me, this was the first E3 where I've ever seen games on the floor that weren't ready to be at E3. I saw multiple games crash on the floor while I was there.
Oh, really?
Not just in one location, just as we're wandering around, games are crashing.
Yeah, I saw that several times. Yeah.
Mm. There were two. Mobile Ops was this game where the frame rate was easily like, it was like 5 to 10 frame rates per second, which if 15 frames per second is the minimum that's acceptable by most video game companies.
At E3. And
anywhere. To publish, period.
Right, right.
5, it's like, you know, I'm moving, I've stopped, got a drink, I'm moving,
yeah.
I'm moving.
And yeah, it's like you go to nudge something so you can aim at something, and then you're like, you know, where's the guy?
Yeah. I mean, that's the problem with E3 is, you know, we all know that they're incomplete and you can see some problems and you know, and you can even ask them, hey, where are you guys on this? Yeah. But there is a point in which it's just not good to show up with the product.
It's not ready yet.
Yeah.
There was a Might and Magic Dark Messiah.
Right.
I don't know if any of you saw that. All right. When I first saw the game, I was so upset by the performance of the game that I almost didn't watch the trailer. Right.
Right.
Mm. It was just choppy. Everything. It looked like I was watching a claymation.
Yeah.
You know, and like the design looked good, but it wasn't good enough to keep me watching.
It's an Oblivion style design. So it's a first person, you know.
You see the little hands on the screen.
Yeah. And fighting monsters.
But then, I mean, I saw it actually looks like an interesting game if they can get their performance up. The guy was playing a wizard character, right? And he's fighting like an enormous cave troll type thing. So the cave troll runs up to him and thwacks him and does enormous amounts of damage. The guy turns around and runs, right? Mm-hmm. And so what you see him do is the hands go up and he casts 3 little fireball spells that fly out in front of him, okay? And then what you see, the last time he casts it, the hand stays up as the fireballs fly out. And then as he's running away, he turns and points at the thing that's chasing him.
Mm-hmm.
And the 3 fireballs that were in front of him arc over him, dive back, and hit the thing behind him.
Oh, so he directs it
guided
into the
creature. He's able to guide the missiles.
Wire guide
the missiles. The environment was interactive, mm-hmm. right? So like he's running along, and there's a log hanging from the ceiling for some reason.
Right,
it's a
and
trap.
He shoots the chain, and the log drops and hits the cave troll.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, tricks the cave troll into going through some hot coals, and it was interesting.
The cave troll falls to the ground, you know, and he runs up and he stabs its eye out. It was a cyclops, is what it was.
Is that what it was?
It was a cyclops. So he runs up, stabs its eye out. Now it's running around blind.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. Well, that's cool.
So interesting environments, but the it looked very plain. It didn't look very exciting visually. You know, Might and Magic is one of my old favorite childhood franchises. I loved that game, but
if it came out tomorrow, I would probably be a little disappointed, but if that's just, you know, a step along the way, then I'm kind of excited about it.
I still think it was too early a step to be showing off at E3.
Well, that's what I'm hoping.
That could have just been, though, the game still could be amazing. It could have just been a miscalculation to actually bring it to E3.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I'm actually interested in this game a lot.
Yeah, that was one interesting thing that EA did, which was in the lower corner of several of the games, Superman being one of them, mm-hmm. they said how far in development they were. 40% developed.
They did it last year, too.
You know, and it really helped sort of set expectation for what you were saying. Because the first thing I saw when I walked up was, his cape's screwed up. Superman's cape's not working right. And then I went, well, and I looked down and went, well, obviously cape physics are coming later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of which, Justice League Heroes. Yeah.
Fantastic Four.
I wanted to like it so bad because the childhood memories that just flood over.
Can I just say
can you play Firestorm?
There are 4 unlockable, 6 unlockable characters on the PSP that they have not yet released.
Mm.
But we got inside information.
Oh, you did?
I don't think we were supposed to be told, but we got told by someone.
Well, tell us.
Was it
one
on
of
the
unlockable
floor?
Characters is Green Arrow.
Green Arrow. Ooh. Okay.
The problem with these games is, first of all, that this, I mean, we've played this exact same build or engine.
The gauntlet.
Like, like nine times.
Baldur's Gate.
And the second problem is that when these guys attack, it's always like, attack, delay, attack, delay. You know, and it's like, it's really kind of like
I actually complained about that to the guy demoing the game. And he's like, oh, well, you know, you can upgrade stuff. So I'm like, oh, you can upgrade the speed with which you attack? And he's like, your attacks can get stronger as you get through the game. I'm like, well,
That something anybody else noticed? Most of the people we talked to weren't developers. They were people that had been given the game, had been briefed on what to show, and that was pretty much it.
That's normal for most of the floor people.
I don't know.
If you're a media person, then they scurry off and get you a producer.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know. Previous years, though, I've had a lot of conversations with the guys, you know, talking.
Yeah, I noticed two things here. First was that the very first thing I went up to go see was the Two Towers, the
Middle Earth.
And you know, first of all, that's in the middle of a 360 degree screen
where they're showing Aaron's movie. Which was awesome.
Which is I mean, although as E3 always was not as loud as before, which was great. In this tiny room, it is blazingly loud.
Yeah.
Right? And over to one side, they're demoing this, and this guy demos it, and he's got this headset that he talks into, and you put the earpiece over yourself and over your ears, and you can actually hear him where you can't hear him. And he gives a great demo.
Right.
Yep.
And you're just really personal. And then the rest of the time I'm walking around, there's no one around who knows a damn thing about the product out of 9 out of 10 places. And you walk up to some game, and it looks like World of Warcraft, where you run up and you hit a button, and then you don't even hit the button to attack. You hit the one button, and the guy just sits here and attacks, and you just watch him attack.
Well, the big three local – I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't interrupt. The big three local producers, Activision, THQ, and EA all had personalized presenters.
Right, right.
You know, the rest of them, though, I mean, I'm not making any excuses for anyone.
Right.
They have to come a lot farther.
PC game, though, just about most of the PC games that I saw, the ones that I'm talking about –
you're on your own.
It was like, you're on your own. You sit here, you play with it, and they all felt like –
I got some good demos from Lord of the Rings Online. They gave me a really good demo and answered a lot of questions.
I had a hilarious experience with Priston Tale 2, Second Enigma.
Where'd you find that? Was that even at E3?
They were on the south floor. They were in the main display area off on like the far right corner by the bathrooms, which I guess could be a good location as long as you have some good air filters.
Everybody's going through it one time.
Exactly.
Was this where they had the two booth babes? The one with
the one with the sword and the bow.
Okay.
They were probably my favorite. I know you liked the Conan the Barbarian booth babes, but I liked those two women.
I thought the Conan babes were great.
But okay, so I went back there, and Peter's trying out the game. I'm looking at the game, and this is the one you talked about looking like World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
And to me, it was the epitome of it was Lineage. It was a Lineage ripoff.
Right.
But I go up to talk to one of the exhibitors. I'm like, so, you know, this looks like it's running on a very high-end computer. What's your min spec on this? And he goes, I do not understand. I'm like, oh, you're Japanese. You're like Japanese. Okay, what requirements does your computer need to run this? You need to have computer, yes.
Keyboard and mouse, please.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, God. So I kind of cut short our conversation, and I go over to the other two exhibitors that are over there, these two girls talking to each other.
Yeah.
I'm like, I was curious, you know, what you need to run this game and how close you are to being finished. They turn around, oh, yes, game, very good. I'm like, oh, God.
So they needed to bring somebody.
I was never able to find anyone there who spoke English. Like, I couldn't get any answers about this game.
Now, I have to admit, I mean, that was the game where I started to have the World of Warcraft feel to it, because it's like, you know, it was all, I mean, never mind.
All right,
never mind.
I'd like to wrap up my last PC titles. I don't know if you guys have any more. Neverwinter Nights 2 was there.
Yeah.
It kind of looked a little too much like 1, graphically.
I thought it was actually a big step forward from 1 graphically, but it looked like
a little better. But I mean the setup. Like, yes, I kind of felt like it should be a little more Oblivion-ish. You know, we're that far down the path, maybe we should get a little more into the game, like down and dirty into the
streets. It's definitely like third person above the top, but it did look like it had better quality of graphics.
I think
not going Oblivion is a good choice for them. Because I think D&D players, specifically D&D players, really
want
like
that
to
tabletop.
See their character. They want that tabletop experience on the level.
Battlefield 2142.
Okay.
Yeah.
Looked good.
Yeah.
Looked fun. I
think it got stomped by Quake Wars ET, though.
Quake Wars?
Quake Wars ET, I think, by the way, the crap out of it.
What was the booth babe for Quake Wars? She was by far the hottest booth babe. And they, like, spray painted on this, like, green...
No, it was a green sock skirt that went from her.
You got to get the
information. I know her. She's a hacker from where I work.
Yeah, could you get her to come on Geeks On? Find out. You can find out. That's sure. Find out who she was, and let's get her on.
This is an audio program, Aaron. That doesn't help.
Right. Exactly.
She doesn't have to know
that. By the way, we will be putting some pictures of stuff up on the web.
Yeah, there will be photos. Enemy Territories Quake Wars was there.
Yeah.
Big crowd. Looks awesome. Still curious about... it almost looked a little bit too unrealish about, like, the kill. Like, you had to, like, keep filling people up with bullets. I couldn't tell, like, how long it took to kill somebody. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, but, man, lots of people playing that, and they look like they're having a lot of fun.
Well, and the Team Fortress aspect of it, a little more class-oriented work, people having to work together and help each other. That's the part that excites me.
Of the Wolfenstein Enemy Territories.
So. Yeah.
You know.
Which is good. That's all a good thing. Yeah. Command and Conquer, Tiberian Sun was there. Rise and Fall. Was that the one we saw, real-time strategy game?
It was Rise and Fall. It was by Midway.
Oh, yeah.
It was a PC RTS, and its shtick or gimmick was that it was an RTS that you had heroes that you go into first-person mode.
Third-person
mode. And in the scenarios, you'd play that person at times, and then you'd also build up. In the versus mode, where you're playing with multiplayer, it ends up being sort of your super weapon. You play more of an RTS, and then you can use that person to sneak in. And, I mean, this person's worth like a legion worth of battle capabilities. And to keep you from using it the whole time, the more combat you do, it wears them down, and then they have to regenerate by other waiting
stamina.
And other means. So
good deal.
The cool thing was that, you know, you're down in – you create thousands of armies, and you send them on the boats, and you send them – but then you're in there with them. Mm-hmm. In third person, and it looked amazing. So that's what I thought caught my eye.
It's just the latest generation of that looking at the tabletop and then coming all the way in.
Right.
Okay.
And then, of course, there was Spore, which was behind closed doors as far as the demos. But we've all seen the demo. And quite frankly, this game gets pulled off and they actually get it done correctly and they pull off what I think we're all seeing... This game is going to be one fun game, and it's going to be different than anything we've seen before. It's really the ultimate god game. If you like Populous, if you like Sim Cities, if you like The Sims, if you liked,
if you wished real time strategy had been good.
What did you say? I like Sim Earth.
I had a hard time with it.
It was too clunky. Like a scientific
first
program.
Person I've met who liked it.
But if you like all those things, if you like Pac-Man, I mean, the game starts out like Pac-Man.
They've done it before. They made Sim Life originally.
Right.
And that was the most physically painful game I ever tried to play.
Oh, Sim Life is what I'm talking about. Sim Earth, I've never played.
Sim Earth was way back in the day.
Sim Life is the one.
Oh my God, there's something wrong with you.
Oh, that's I even have it. I bought another copy. It doesn't run anymore.
Oh my God.
But anyway, this is to me. Go. You guys have to go check out. I think we even have a link to it on an old. Old.
I'm curious to see if the creationists are going to be anti-sport.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, wait. You play God, so you know.
Yeah, but you're evolving things.
But it's intelligent design.
It's intelligent design.
I mean, you sit down and make the decisions of the hands and the other pieces. So it could be interpreted both ways.
But now you're playing God, and that's blasphemy.
That's true. Did you guys see anything down the lower levels that you liked that were odd?
Unfortunately, we had to breeze through the Kentai Hall. Can't I?
Yeah, we got there when it opened, and we were booted out as it closed. It was like literally they play bugle music, and they're like out of here.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
So we you know.
Well, Dylan and I found some cool things down there. This is the place where if you want to find the stuff, if you want to go see E3 and find stuff that you will not find on IGN or GameSpot or any other site, you go down that hall, and there's some crazy stuff down there.
And you have stuff that people are looking for distribution nodes. Other people are looking for somebody to pick it up and make it something you can manufacture. A lot of different
some people are hoping that Microsoft will walk downstairs and see them. Because we saw some stuff for the 360 that isn't a game. It's technology that I was like, damn, I kind of hope that Microsoft...
Like what?
Well, one of them was, I think they called it, was Gesture Tech.
They had this. You told me about this. I want this. Yeah.
Oh, no, no, no. This is different. So we'll talk about it. Gesture Tech was this guy who developed face tracking technology that was like one button. So he had this big monitor with a little teeny like iToy camera for the 360. And you put your face in the front and you hit the X button and it says, find this face, Aaron Hendricks. Mm-hmm. And then you can run your ass all over the place, dodging, and it had this little square that tracked your face perfectly. If Dylan walked up, it didn't see his face. It only saw mine. The difference.
And if Aaron walked off camera, it would start looking around, and it would pick me up because I was the closest human-looking thing there. Right. And then, but when Aaron came back, it would snap back over into it.
Oh, interesting.
It was very cool.
And so it was face recognition technology with motion capture, motion chase. And so there's different ways that that could be utilized, either in video games or in video conferencing. I've seen it in the corporate world where motion sensors, where you're doing a video conference, you move and the camera swivels with you to keep on you. So well, other practical uses as well. This could be the same thing.
Instead of the camera having to swivel, it could just crop. And so if you're playing a racing game, instead of having a whole room with Aaron in the middle, it crops just Aaron. And if I move around, it keeps a crop and then puts that in a little box. So you always just have the guy's face locked into all the games instead of this, you know, mess.
Good deal. I like that.
They also had some great – the same company had stuff where – you could touch a screen and it tracked your hands and stuff, so you could, you know, move water. So
it had I've seen that demo before. That thing's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I want that.
Looks like a huge light table.
Yeah.
That then projects up from top instead of down.
Were they showing you the map presentation?
They didn't do that one. They had water and leaves and flowers. You could.
I saw, they did that, and then they moved into a map presentation where they showed the world, right? And, the Earth. And then. He grabbed the world and spun it.
Oh, that's cool.
So that he got to, like, the United States, clicked on California. California got
clicked
bigger.
By touching
and
it.
Then, I put it on the wrong place. He grabs Sacramento and pulls us up to Los Angeles, clicks again.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, it was awesome.
What was the thing that you were thinking that Aaron was going to talk about?
Well, Dylan, you the body pad.
Is this your discovery?
No. Well, we just saw the guy. This is what we think you guys will like because it's for fighter games. It's for the PlayStation, PlayStation 2, and the Xbox. And it's called Body Pad. What it is it's a wireless controller setup that you strap. You get portions of controllers for each hand. And then over your biceps and over your calves, you strap the other controllers. And so like when sensors. You flex your arm, it triggers the button on the screen and then shows the guy doing the punch with it.
And it was pretty instantaneous.
Yeah.
It wasn't that laggy.
I mean, it was happening while he was doing it. And you could watch him make you watched the model make his movements, and the character in the game immediately did the same thing as he did it.
Wanted.
Now, in your hands is also sensors. They're controllers, and they've got the sticks there, the D-pads.
Okay.
So you move your character around also, and you can hit, and you can hold them like a shift button. So if you hit another way while holding, it does a different move.
So like
you can do multiple types of hits.
So by flexing, it'd just do a jab. By flexing while holding the button, it might do a roundhouse or another type of movement.
Yeah, I was going to say, because like, how would you throw? You'd have to like kick and...
both hands.
By doing both hands, you're flexing both biceps.
Well, I know, but most fighting games, it's like you have to hit the kick and the punch at the same time. So would you have to with your leg and your
they
arm?
They have a book set up. They have these settings. And so what you do is you look up your game and you set it for it, and then it... maps
that's awesome.
And the guy said there is a bit of a learning curve to be able to use it, but you get used to it. And so I'm guessing that there's a combination of thumb buttons as well to get some of those
Screw
more advanced
Dance
pieces.
Revolution. That's my new
fitness. Yeah,
and it's all wireless. I mean, the neat part is it's all wireless, so you're not tied up. You can't walk away and drag your console off.
This is the next edition for a physical fitness gym.
Yeah. We saw a lot of that down there. There's all sorts of stuff. But the last thing I want to bring up, we saw virtual glasses that some worked, some didn't. But There's some third parties that are already coming out with their own versions of Guitar Hero guitars.
Yeah.
So that you didn't have to buy the standard one. You could buy ones with different shapes and all that. So I think you're going to about ready to see a lot of different types of guitars coming out for Guitar Hero.
That's awesome.
Which is pretty cool. You know, I'm glad to see.
You want that guitar that's you, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, that's it for me. On E3, you have any guys have anything else?
I'm done.
The only other one that got me excited was Virtua Fighter 5 is on the floor there. Unfortunately, it was not the console version. They had the Japanese stand-up game,
right?
And it's the fighting game I've been waiting for so long. It didn't try and be Tekken like all the others. It's straight up Virtua Fighter. They've added two new characters, one of which does monkey style kung fu.
So it's taken 10 years to come up with two characters?
Well, hold on. There's some more stuff. There's monkey style kung fu, and then there's a Mexican wrestler.
Oh.
So we've got two wrestlers in the game now. But they've evolved the martial art forms that each of the characters use.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more complexity. And I think the drawback to Virtual Fighter probably has been the fact that they try and be realistic with most of the martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great for a game, but it tends to look less spectacular than the more
over-the-top,
fanciful over-the-top things.
Gratuitous,
right?
Use of
exactly
movement.
So this one has it's taken in more of the sort of ridiculous master style stuff. So like Pi now has a string of attacks where she goes down, attacks low,
mm-hmm.
and then continues advancing in a crouch position, attacking between your knee and your feet.
Oh.
For like five strings, and it's beautiful. She's just spinning in this crouch position, and it's gorgeous. So I have high hopes that it'll be the next good fighter.
High hopes are done. Waiting for another
God
breakout
Lord,
fighter.
Please give me a good fighter.
Alrighty, well, we knew this was going to be an extra long episode, but all of our E3 shows are always crazy. It's 3 days and so much crap being thrown at you all the time, but we hope that this was comprehensive enough to...
If you've got questions for us, feel free to email us at geeks@geekson.com.
Yep, and definitely check out all those, you know, IGN, GameSpot, Team Xbox. All those have more in-depth on anything that we could do.
We, however, will give you completely unsponsored and truthful responses on any questions you ask
us. Yeah, exactly.
And if you want to, if anybody's really burning to understand more about how the Booth Babe situation worked out, CNET's website has a great comparison of different Booth Babes from 05 and 06. And you can see the differences made there.
Yeah. Perhaps we should put that up on our links page.
Yep, and we also have some photos. We will be putting on E3 photos that we took, and we do have some booth babes there and some...
a few.
I took some pictures of the Star Trek.
And one booth boy.
And one booth... Oh, I didn't get a picture of him.
There was a booth boy this year?
Yeah, there was one.
Oh, there was a bruiser looking guy over at one of the Guitar Hero stands.
Of course.
Actually, there was a dude that was all in silver who had like some sort of red light inside his mouth. So when he smiled, his teeth glowed red.
I have no idea what he was selling, though.
I don't either, but he looked funky.
He was hanging out in the lobby.
Yeah. Well, ladies, go next year. There's a couple of booth guys out there for you. It's a little hard to find, but all right, guys. Well, wrapping up this year's E3, email us at geeks@geekson.com or go to our website because we have forums there.
Oh, and I'd just like to interrupt your closing by saying thanks for letting me sit in.
Oh, no.
This has been a lot of fun. I don't know how many other people out there. I've been listening for about 7 months, and I feel like part of the conversation when I'm in the car and yelling at the stereo. So to be able to actually be here as a geekling and somebody who enjoys listening to you, it's been a lot of fun being able to sit in.
Well, we needed it's hard to get to see all of E3. Like, you need as many eyes on the floor as possible. So since Matt couldn't come in here and Lisa couldn't come in, all of our everybody's out of town. Oh, by the way, what's your forums name? Are you on the forums?
I'm Redshirt.
Oh, so you can ask Redshirt questions because you were also there for 3 days. So anyway, get on the forums, go online, email us, and tune in next week for another
a new topic. We have no idea what.
Nothing to do with video games, though, I
God,
guarantee.
No.
Alrighty, have a good week, geek week, everybody.
Take care.
Geek it
Bye.
Out.
Bye.